Welcome to the Halftime Chat with me, Stephen Gacy, in the change room made just for you by Bright Rock. It's not every day you get to speak to a culture changer. Former Blitzball coach Paul True is just that. Well-traveled and deeply studious, Paul reveals what are the key elements to building a strong system and gives us a sober take on what true change and transformation looks like. Paul True, how are you doing today, brother?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. I think the last time I saw you was in Hong Kong. You know?
Yes, we were. Good times. First of all, rugby is honestly one of the greatest games in the world, I personally feel, and I'm sure you feel the same. One thing I need to say, when you have many accolades that I can see written down here, but one thing I can say about you from knowing you is that you are what you call the utter gentleman. And I can, and all the accolades aside, you've always been so respectful and so loving and so caring in all the years that I've known you, and I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Even the days when you were coach. For me, talk about your rugby career and how you got into rugby and the transition into rugby as a kid.
I think, you know, just to maybe from the onset, just to state, you know, that I didn't pay you to say that.
No, not paid at all. People know me that I shoot from the hip.
Yeah, but I think you know, I do when it comes to me as a person. I never like talking about myself, you know, but I think, you know, I do have my moments. And I think, you know, especially when you move into that coaching space, yeah, I think you need to almost like, you know, manage in a different way, in a different style. And so I do have my moments, you know, where I'm quite gentle and quite humble, you know, but when you actually step into that arena and you're working with a team, then it's something obviously very different. But as far as my career and playing career, you know, back in the day, you know, I probably was born into a rugby family, and all my brothers played the game. So, you know, I used to play rugby on the streets, you know, like when you stuff, you know, the plastic bottle, you know, with all the grass and stuff and papers. And I mean, that's how I used to play in the streets, and obviously started to play when I was probably about 8, 9, you know, at school. And, you know, just continue, you know, after that.
So what changed in you that really showed you that you can do this as a living and this can be a professional? What changed? What did you see?
Well, so I've studied at UWC, and then also as a former teacher, then I went back to teaching in Swellendam as well. It's my hometown. And obviously when rugby turned professional in 95, 96, you know, obviously I was still teaching at the time, but then the opportunity was there, rugby turned professional, and I've decided, okay, I want to give this a go and see if I can make this a career.
All right, so after playing for South Africa for 7 years at the Sevens team, you played for 10 years, right?
About 10 years, yes.
You became head coach for 10 years. How was that?
I must
the change from being a player to a coach.
Yeah, I think it was quite challenging, I think, at the start. But obviously, I think the first change for me was, you know, obviously moving into, you know, the space where I became the captain of the team, of the Sevens team, and the late Chester Williams, you know. You know, under him, he almost like allowed you to almost like to manage and to lead the team in a way that, you know, that made that change a little bit easier when you moved into that space, you know, taking over the team as a coach. But it is never easy, because all of a sudden, I mean, the year before you were playing with certain players, and the year after you were coaching them. Yeah. And I think Neil Powell, the current, you know, Springbok Sevens coach, I think experienced the same, because I played with him and then I had to coach him, and he played with certain of some of the players, and then, you know, all of a sudden he was coaching them. Yeah. And I think, you know, if you don't have, you know, very grounded, you know, principles and the philosophy of how you want to coach, and the things that you're going to stand for and what's going to be negotiable and non-negotiable, then I think it's going to be very challenging. Yeah. But I think the change from a player to captain and then captain to the coach made it a little bit easier. And obviously having a good network and experienced players around you also, you know, assisted.
So you're the first African coach to lead the team to victory at the World Sevens Series in 2009. What is your secret to the success?
Well, that wasn't an easy process, I can promise you that. I mean, I took the team over in 2004, and in 2009 we won the first World Series. But, you know, like in any business and any sport, there's always like a tipping point. You know, there's always something that happens that, you know, okay, some things need to change. And I think for us it was the fact that, I think it was in 2007, we've played England 3 times and we've lost by 100 points. We could only score, I think, 1 or 2 tries. And
In sevens.
In 3 games, they put 100 points on us.
What? Were you playing with 5 for 7?
And actually at the time, you know, Cecil was our sponsor at the time, you know, and I had a breakfast with one of the, you know, executives in Singapore, of all the places.
And that must have been a very expensive breakfast. Very expensive.
And I said to him, listen, you know, this is, I think, you know, we're coming in at the stage where we will have to decide where we want to take this. You know, I think with Bright Rock now, you know, being involved like with the Western Province and the Stormers, you want to see success. You want to be associated with the, you know, success and teams that's playing well and it's performing well. And especially being a national team, you know, you want to create hope. You want to inspire young kids, you know, to take up the game, and you want to be successful as a team, you know. But what is happening at the moment, you know, we need to elevate the profile of the game. We need to become more successful. How can we do that? We need assistance, you know, with this. We need more exposure, you know, as a team. We need more marketing. We need to become full-time. In order for that to happen, we need financial backing. And I think back in the day, you know, obviously with SA Rugby, you know, the exco at the time in the board, you know, they allowed us and actually increased our budget. You know, they allowed us to become full-time for the first time, because we were actually the first time or the first team in the world that actually offered professional contracts, and also to be based in like a central location like in Stellenbosch. So there was a first, you know, like, I think, for us. And that all those little things, you know, that contributed to the towards, you know, us ultimately winning the World Series.
So for me, so after that, so that more money came in, a lot of the times more money doesn't mean the results are going to come through.
No.
So Kyle Brown speaks very, 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 very highly of you, and he says you're one of his biggest influences in his life, and without you, the Sevens, the whole entire process of where the Sevens is now wouldn't have happened. And he really speaks highly of you, and we had a great conversation about you. So I personally feel like you need a lot more credit in being part of the establishment of that system. What did you do to get the system where it is now? Like, what did you do? Because money is not enough.
And it's never going to be enough. Yeah. I think like in any business and any sport where there's success, it's, or you always find that there are good people, you know, within that business or within that, you know, that sport. Mm-hmm. And I think that was probably the first thing that we had to change. It was very, very difficult. It was a challenging time because you wanted to take the team in a certain direction and you had to surround yourself with good people. So one of the things that was really important, that some of the key, you know, and most experienced Sevens players had to make some tough, you know, calls in terms of, do you want to be part of this? So if we want to be successful as a team, you need to pack up, you know, leave your family maybe behind, leave whatever is important to you, move to Stellenbosch and really make this big goal that we want to become the first team, Sevens team, South African team to actually to win a World Series. So the question that we ask the players is that one day when you're 30, when you're 40, when you're, you know, 50 and you're sitting out there and you're retired, what is the question that you want to ask? You know, if someone asks you that question, say, what are the biggest thing that you've achieved in your life and you had an opportunity to do it and you didn't take it, how are you going to feel then? Mm. You know, so, and looking back and reflecting on your life. But I think for the first thing was basically is to have good people around you. And I think surrounding myself, you know, with some quality players and good people, you know, I think, you know, you spoke about the fact that you you need people who are in it, you know, for the right reasons, and who can stay the distance. They're prepared, you know, to go the extra mile. And external networks, you know, whether it was science and whether it was business and whether it was sport around the world, people who can you can actually bring into the system and making sure that you can create those small steps and the conditions for this team to excel.
No, agreed. I've always said, because I do a lot of work in rugby and different kinds of sport, I've always said that if we can get all the teams around the country to be like the Sevens team, because they always have such unity. They're like a family. The Sevens boys, if you go out, they are together in everything. At the airport, they're together. When the plane is delayed, they're together. Yeah. And that's got a lot to do with you. And you're a very modest man, but I will give you that credit. And I feel like you need a lot more credit in that department. And then you moved from being coach, winning everything, doing everything that you had to do with the Sevens series. You moved to Kenya to coach there. Mm. Now, you spoke about it. A lot of these players needed to make sacrifices to get where they needed to get to be the best you can be, and you have to change things. You have to make sacrifices. Yeah. Moving to Kenya, that couldn't have been easy. How was that change?
I think the most difficult part of that was probably leaving a family behind. Yeah. And I think, you know, in a sense, any player, and you spoke about Carl, and I think, you know, the most difficult part for them is parting ways with the team, with the family that you've been involved, you know, with for so long. And I think that is probably was probably the most difficult thing for me. Mm-hmm. But I must give credit also to SA Rugby, because Rassie and you know, the CEO did offer me to stay on at SA Rugby. But at the time, I just felt like I've been involved, you know, maybe it's just time for me also to move on and maybe to be challenged and grow in a different way. Mm-hmm. And but leaving the team behind, I think, was the most difficult one for me. And then you've been part of this family, you know, both as a player and then as a coach for almost 10 years. And now all of a sudden you're competing against the same team. That was very, very challenging for me at the time. So I had to make peace with the fact, you know, you have a different family now. You have a different team that you're coaching and, you know, and you have to move on. But that took time. You know, I think I'm only settling in now eventually.
Okay. And then the change between 15s rugby, 7s rugby to 15s rugby. Let's talk about that, because a lot of people don't understand.
Completely different ball.
It's not just 8 less people on that field. There's different things that are done differently. But what is the change? First of all, could you just explain to people the difference between 7s and 15? It's not just a numbers game, but you coaching 15s and differently coaching 7s. How's that changed in your whole...
So obviously in 7s and from a coaching perspective, the dynamics is different. I mean, like in 15s, you will have more like your set pieces, like your lineouts and your scrums and your kicking game, which is more important. And obviously your defense, which is, you know, equally important in 7s as well. 7s, you know, very much more fast-paced. You know, you need different kind of athletes, and it's unique, you know, type of like specimen that you actually need for 7s. And obviously the game is, you know, so much quicker. So moving, you know, from 7s to 15s, you know, was a big change for me again. So my whole life has been this roller coaster of change, because firstly, you know, from a player to a captain, then from a captain, you know, to a coach, and then from moving from the Springbok 7s to Kenya, and then from Kenya and 7s to 15s, and all of a sudden, you know, to do something that I've actually never done before. So credit must also go to Gert Smal, you know, our former director of rugby, because he asked me to come and join the Stormers, and I'm grateful for that opportunity. But it took me a couple of months to settle in. So the Stormers were very great, you know, very accommodating in that regard, because they allowed me the first 6 months just to find my feet and just to observe. And then after that, obviously, I started to take over the role as the defense coach, you know, within 15s and with the Stormers.
So it sounds like you really like you like challenges, and because you could have picked very easy roads, you could have picked an avenue that would be a lot easier and more comfortable for you. Is that like a personal thing that you are trying to go through as you teach your children this about change and challenges and taking it on the chin, or is it just you've been dealt these cards, just deal with it?
I think it's obviously a process, and I think you must go where your aspirations are, and obviously where the opportunities, you know, come up as well. But I think I wanted to challenge myself. I wanted to see, you know, can I do this? And again, even now, like, you know, being involved with the Stormers and Western Province for almost 5 years, and also consulting with Japan, because it's a different culture again, you know. So all of a sudden you were in Kenya, you had to deal with a different culture, and now you're moving into that space where in Japan, you know, you don't quite understand the language, so you have to communicate in a different way. And I've always been a person who's been chasing knowledge, you know, and I want to continue to learn and, you know, and to grow in different ways in different areas. And I think I've always wanted to challenge myself in that regard.
Okay, so another thing that I've always been a fan of is you. Sometimes I watch you on the sideline. It's like rugby, you see it in slow motion and differently to many of us. A lot of us just see collisions, scrum, pass the ball, pass the ball, pass the ball. Do you ever get a chance just to enjoy rugby without seeing 5 meters that way, that's a scrum, that takes that's 8 men, but like, it's the same as me watching a film sometimes. I'm always like, this is going to happen. Do you still have a chance to enjoy rugby?
I think it's it is difficult because I'm very analytical, and
that's what I mean. Analytical.
Yeah.
Analytical is the word. Yeah. Thank you, English God. Thank you.
And I think when you're a coach, you always, you know, look through that lens. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're watching sport, and especially when you're watching rugby. Mm-hmm. But lately, I mean, I think I've also come to enjoy. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the finer things in life, and also when it comes to sport, and just to try to relax and not to analyze too much, you know, but. So basically what I do now is I just go to a game and I watch it, and even though I like that now, I like the World Cup, you know, I would download the games afterwards and then I will do my analysis.
The times, I'm struggling with the times. 12 o'clock during the day, what are you doing at 12 watching rugby? But it's difficult.
It is difficult. Mm. But I mean, you get used to it. And I think once you're a coach, you know, you're always going to be a coach. And then it's like almost, and coming, you know, from the teaching, from a teaching background as well, I think, you know, that also, you know, makes the change a little bit easier.
Mm. So because you come from teaching, my mother comes from teaching, 33 years as a principal. Is it not difficult to look at the people that you coach as students, or sometimes you have to look at them as part of the team?
No, I think it's the if you understand learning, how learning occurs in and teaching methodology and coaching methodology, it becomes easier because there's a lot of transfer, you know, between different, you know, codes and between business and sport. And I think, you know, those are the kind of things. If you understand the principle of learning, it becomes easy because you know how people learn in a certain way, and you know you're connecting the dots.
Agreed.
And you're looking for certain behaviors. If you're very principle based, you understand that things are run according to a system, then it becomes easier.
Okay, so all the questions I'm asking you aren't all going to be easy. I'm going to throw in somewhere.
Listen, some curveballs.
So some people who are listening here might not agree, but for me, I know how it is. I'm a black man in a space that's predominantly white. You are a person of color in a space that's predominantly white.
I was hoping that question wasn't going to come up.
No. Don't worry. I'm not going to. Don't worry. How has it been a person of color in the system of rugby?
Yeah,
without not being specific to any experience.
I think it's I've always been a person that is that firmly believes in the principle of fairness, the principle of equality. Mm. And I think if you speak to every single black coach out there, because I can only now, I mean, I've been a player and I understand that space, but now as a coach, you know, I think what is really, you know, I think tough for black coaches out there at the moment is that you know, they're not getting the opportunities. I think that they could maybe also be given to coach at that elite level. So I think in a sense that the black coaches sometimes feel like they've been marginalized, and they're not being given the fair opportunities, you know, to actually to prove that they also can coach at that level. And I think the landscape is changing a bit, and I think there are concerted efforts, and I think SA Rugby, because they have the, you know, the authority and the power to appoint coaches, like they've done with the SA schools and like they've done with all
Sharks.
the other national teams. But I think the time has also come where, when it comes to the franchises, that our black coaches need to move out of that assistant coach space into the head coaching space. Mm-hmm. And I think it's only when that is going to happen. We've seen, you know, the impact of Sia, you know, being the first
Sticks.
Ethnic black captain, mm-hmm. you know, of the Springboks. We've seen the impact of that, you know, on us and with our history, you know, as South Africans, mm-hmm. what that, you know, has on us as a nation. And I think it's important. The day that we're gonna see an ethnic black coach, you know, as coach of the Springboks, or any black coach, you know, as coach of the Stormers or the Sharks or the Bulls, you know, I think that's really when people are gonna start to resonate with their team, and with us as a country. That's the only way. And you see what's happening in cricket now. You see what's happening in other sports, even globally. You know what is happening within other countries as well. You know, they're instituting policies to make sure that people are being given opportunities. Mm. Now, what black coaches are asking is not to be given, you know, a free ride. Mm. What they're asking for is an opportunity to prove themselves. They're not asking, you know, for anything else. They just want a seat at the table to make sure that, let me also come and present. Let me also at least show you that I have the skills and the competencies to coach at that level. Mm. And I think that is a very difficult one at the moment. So when it comes to fairness, when it comes to equality, I think we still have a long way to go in making sure that everyone has got a fair and equal chance, you know, to coach our franchises and to coach our top, you know, Currie Cup teams and also to coach our national teams.
But to anyone who is listening, when you do get given the chance, do it well, do it incredibly well. When you get the opportunity, make sure you do it big and you don't let anything slide.
But I think, you know, that's probably where some people has got it wrong, because quotas, you know, within equality law is actually unlawful. Mm. It's only when you're suitably qualified that you actually can coach at that level. And I've always believed, for me to become the Springbok coach or to become the Stormers coach, I need to be almost like over-qualified at my present, you know, role that I'm doing now to make the jump to the next one. So to make sure, for any black coach out there, and whether you're black and whether you're white, it actually doesn't matter, because to make that step up, you know, to the next level, you need to be qualified to coach at that level. And that's why, like, I've... for me, from a personal perspective, you know, I try to connect and to interact with so many coaches, you know, internationally, and whether it's my studies and whether it's coaching and whether it's business, to make sure that when you move into that space that you're ready to take up that role and you can be successful.
Great. All right, finally, the final question, because we had you for 20 minutes, is change. What does change mean to you? Because for me, out of the only one we've ever interviewed, you've spoken about change, taking on challenges the most. What does change mean to you?
Follow the bounce.
Good luck with that. Good luck with following the bounce of a rugby ball. It's not a soccer ball. It's a rugby ball.
Yeah, I think it's you almost like have to also understand the space that we're in at the moment, in where life is taking us, where business is taking us, where technology is taking us, you know, where sport is taking us. Is I think the time where you have to come up like with a 5-year plan, and this is where you're going to be. I think that is still important, but it's really being adaptive within the moment and changing, you know, as you go along. And for me, that has been, when I talk about change, that is for me what is the most important, to equip you with the skill sets, the competencies to almost like to cope with that kind of change. So I can now say to you, okay, so because I can move from a coach to, from a player to a coach, I can move from sevens to 15s, you know, it's different sports, it's different things, it's different environments, different cultures. But what are the things, the capabilities that I need to make sure that I can cope with that change? So for me, change is all about, you know, if I'm a coach and I'm coming into a new environment, you know, how will that affect the people, you know, in the current environment, and how is it going to affect me, and how am I going to deal with that? So if I don't understand, you know, how other people are feeling about change and how it's going to affect them and how it's going to make, you know, affect me, seeing things from their perspective and seeing things from my perspective, you know, are two different things, you know, and I need to have that kind of awareness. So emotional intelligence, social intelligence, collaborative intelligence, whatever you want to call it. So Bright Rock is talking about blended families. We're talking about blended intelligence and making sure that you have the skill sets to actually to cope and to deal with change and to manage it, you know, throughout the process.
Great interview, great chatting with you, and I look forward to one day you being the Springbok coach. And I said it.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers, brother. And that was Halftime Chat with me, Stephen Yessi, in the Change Room, made just for you by Bright Rock, the first ever needs matched life insurance that changes as your life changes. For more episodes, subscribe to In the Change Room on Iona FM, Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you listen.